Ms. Karuna Sarup Munshi is a gold medalist in MA Philosophy from Sri Satya Sai University from 1980 to 1986. What a wonderful thing. Four generations of her family has been in close proximity to Swami. Her daughter studied in Baba's elementary school in Puttaparthi for 5 years. Her immediate family has 8 members that have studied in various Sai educational institutions and nearby Anantapur. She has worked in print and television media as well as in social justice movement. She is also an experienced journalist. She devotes her time and talent towards promoting awareness of Bhagwan's teachings and community. Currently, she works as office administrator of Satya Sai School of Toronto in Canada. Also, she has been instrumental in planning and coordination of now popular Walk for Values in Toronto. I would sincerely recommend all of you to please visit walkforvalues.com. It's an amazing site. It's an amazing site. With this, I hand over to Karuna Sarup Munshi. I invite her to the dais.
With love and humility, I offer myself at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan, the true love of my life, the sun and the shine of my life, the wind beneath my wings. Beloved Bhagwan, revered elders, sisters and brothers, Sai Ram to all of you. Today I stand before you with no other claim to fame except one. I stand before you as a graduate of a university that was founded by the cosmic power in its human form, the same cosmic power that founded the universe. I stand before you as a graduate and alumna of an alma mater that bears the name so sacred that at this very moment, in every part of the world, in every language ever spoken, in every country between the North Pole and the South Pole, this name is being invoked for blessing, grace, and protection. I stand before you as an alumna of the Anantapur campus of the Sri Satya Sai University, a proud heritage I never take for granted. Today, 23 years after graduating from the hallowed and sacred campus of the Satya Sai University, when I look back at my career at his lotus feet, my time in his school, I realize that it must have been the culmination of many lifetimes of spiritual yearning and, of course, the blessings of my parents. This experience brought me face to face with the resplendently beautiful Sai, in whom I found myself only perfect and complete. The opportunities to study at his lotus feet allowed my soul, the yearning of my soul, to connect with the higher power to become a reality. Because now God was no longer an abstraction, a picture, a character from a story. He was a living, walking, talking, flesh and blood reality. While explaining the purpose and the reason that drives all human aspirations, the Sufi mystic Rumi once said, and I quote him, "Seek the wisdom that will untie your knot. Seek the path that demands your whole being. Leave that which is not, but appears to be. Seek that which is, but is not apparent." Much like Rumi as a child, I too always desired to find a purpose in life. And my quest for God began very early, and I have one clear, vivid and clear recollection of a day when I was very little, maybe 4 or 5 years old, and I lived in New Delhi, India. And I wanted to find out if there really was a higher power up there, a live, living God. So it was a monsoon night, it was raining cats and dogs, and I stood on the balcony of my apartment and I yelled into the sky as loudly as I could. And I asked God, I said, "Stop the rain for just one quick moment if you're there for real." And he did. All of a sudden, a torrential downpour just stopped. It ceased. And I realized that there was somebody up there listening. And then it continued. And that was the last miracle I ever performed. Shortly after that, in my early childhood, my parents and I moved to live in Kashmir, the hometown where my dad was transferred on his because of his work. In Kashmir, I found that the ancient temples of Kashmir have such an energy. The mosques, every place of worship that my family and I visited, I felt a strange sense of deja vu. I felt a yearning. My soul was being goaded to a higher power. I distinctly remember my brothers and my cousin brothers, my sisters and I, we all used to visit an ancient temple called the Shankaracharya temple on atop a hill where Adi Shankara had actually meditated for a long time before he was self-realized. At that temple, every time I went to the Shivling, I felt this such a strong vibration that I always wanted to as a child cry, but I knew my brothers would make such fun of me that I always had to control myself and come back. But there was something out there that I really, really wanted to connect with. About the same time, my older sister was studying in a school where she came across a friend who was widely traveled. You see, in the late 1960s and early 70s, we did not have much connection with people south of the Vindhya Mountains in India because modes of communication were not as developed as they are now. But my sister's friend came from Bangalore, and she told us, gave us a picture of Swami and said, this is a holy person and he has incredible powers, and her family had met Swami. So because we were a devout Hindu family, we placed Swami's picture in the altar and we continued to pray to continue the tradition that we were born in as Hindu Brahmins. And Swami was one of the many saints that we included onto our altar. But at about the same time, we had a visitor come to our house from Bangalore. Her name was Dr. Sushila, and she stayed with us as a house guest. And Dr. Sushila was very amused to find that we had a picture of Swami in our altar, because she came from Bangalore and she did not believe in Swami. And she found it strange that this Kashmiri family, who has no idea about this person people talk all sorts of things about, they're worshipping him like God. But out of respect for our faith, she did not make any comments about it. When she went back after spending a month with us as our house guest, she sent us a thank you parcel. It was the best thank you parcel we ever received. Along with the nice Bangalore silk sari for my mom, she had taken the trouble to go all the way to Whitefield, only out of respect for our faith. And from there, she had sent us some vibhuti, some prayer books, and of course, the famous Man of Miracles by Howard Merfitt. When this parcel arrived, you can imagine our joy. We devoured every word in that book. And we started chanting those prayers, not knowing how to pronounce any of the Telugu words in the Arati, Kalapalati. I know we mispronounce just about everything, but we just so enjoyed praying to Swami. Why, might you ask, without any proper introduction to Swami, did we take to him like fish to water? The knower within knows certain things that the mind cannot conjure and the senses cannot sense. It's an intense inner experience. The moment that little picture of Swami with the Abhay Hasta entered our lives, he became for us everything we ever imagined God to be. A living, real God. And because he responded, because speaking to that prayer had an instant effect, speaking to that picture had an immediate response and an effect, we knew that there was such power in that image. The name Sai Ram, for us, because we uttered it with such simplicity of thought, it became the Maha Mantra. And right away, my mother realized that all her life, she has sat in front of her altar and read the Ram Charitramanas. The story of Rama's grandeur and glory had actually come true because the same Rama had now incarnated as Sai Rama. My dad's next posting was in the city of Singapore, where the Sai movement was already flourishing in the late 70s. And there we became very, very active in the Sai organization. About the same time, another one of my sisters went to Whitefield to have Darshan of Swami, and she stayed back and joined his college. Little did she know in 1978, when Kalpana went for the first time, that she was blazing a trail that would become a proud family tradition for us. After us, after her, seven more of us just followed her in hot pursuit because we just couldn't think of a better place to grow and live. Not a safer place, not a happier place, not a more divine place. Then the medium of instruction at this university was just love, because the chancellor himself was the most compassionate and loving being, and he was the supreme teacher who set the tone for everything else. Although I joined, my sister went in 1978, my first encounter with Swami was 10 years after I started worshipping him. I remember the first time I beheld Swami physically was in 1978. I was a young teenager. My mom and I were standing outside the auditorium in Vrindavan where the summer course was going on. We did not have any passes. We were not participants, so we were not allowed to even go near the auditorium. Somehow, with patience, despite the Sevadal trying to shoo us away, we managed to linger long enough till Swami came out of the summer course after delivering his discourse to get into his car. At that moment, when Swami was about to get into the car, he walked towards us and I held out a letter. Thank you. And I held out my letter and Swami walked towards me perhaps to take that letter. I really have no recollection of the letter. All I remember is the most intense and compassionate gaze peering through my soul. And in that moment, I experienced eternity. I like to describe that moment when Swami looked at me so intensely that I thought he peered into my soul as my Tat Tvam Asi moment. In that moment, my gaze was locked with God and a connection had been formed. And it was so intense, like that I just couldn't control myself. All I did was cry my little heart out, and my mom didn't know what to do with me. And I just wanted to run away from that place and hide somewhere and bury my face and cry as much as I could, because it felt so good to cry. It just unleashed this floodgate of emotion within me. And after that, when I went back to complete my high school in Singapore, all that I ever yearned was to go to Swami's college and follow my sister's footsteps. Finally, when I did get into the college, I always wanted to know if Swami knew of all my inner struggles as a teenager, because I really, really did try very hard to make to self-improve and make myself worthy of being accepted in his college. It was, for me, I wanted some form of acknowledgement that Swami knew what I had been trying to do. And I vividly remember the first, as soon as I joined one of the early visits to Anantapur, Swami was very busy with all the VIPs, the professors, the guests, and the graduating class. And I didn't have any opportunity to be close to him. I saw him like rest of the crowd. But finally, when Swami was about to leave, he walked very close to the dispensary we had, and there, by chance, I and my friend happened to be in the corridor right in his face. And he just, as he was coming up the steps, he was holding the hem of his robe to come up, and then he looked up and looked me in the eye, and very softly he said, "Good girl." And that was it. That sealed my fate. And I knew that he knew that I had been working very hard on some personal inner issues. The experience of being with Swami was just so magnificent. Any attempt, any effort to quantify, qualify, explain, you just can't do justice to it. Because nothing till then or ever since has come close to the in intensity, to the experience of being God's student. People often ask me to describe the relationship that Baba has with the students. Every time I give the exact same answer. I always tell them, the relationship is like that of being with nothingness. We, the students, are a bunch of zeros, pure globules of nothingness, ciphers. But when you place a whole lot of zeros by themselves, they have no value. Place them next to the one and they acquire value. But in this case, the one is not an ordinary one. The one is the cosmic one. The one is the one without a second. One is the one that the great people describe as one without a second. Ekam Sat Vipra Bahuda Vadanti. When we stand next to Swami, we acquire value. Because I'm a Sai student, I'm allowed to stand here and share my thoughts with you. Because I studied at his lotus feet, I enjoy every privilege of divine protection at every minute of my life. The best way to describe it is to quote Swami himself, and he says, and I quote him, "The bird with you, the wing with me, the foot with you, the path with me, the eye with you, the form with me, the thing with you, the dream with me, the world with you, the heaven with me. So are we bound and so are we free. So we begin and so we end. I in you and you in me." We might be able to study the ray of the sun separately from the sun, or describe the moonlight apart from the moon, but you, or the wave away from the ocean. But nobody, in no way, can ever describe Swami's students separately from him. He is the one who lends light to our life. He is the one who lends value and worth to our existence. As soon as... If I can ask the person with the audiovisual, if you can switch on the slideshow, please. Perhaps the one with the sari distribution. One of my early memories of being in the college, I think I was one of the most excitable new applicants, because I had known Swami since my childhood, but I had very little physical contact with him till I joined the college. Whereas many other girls had always met up with Swami. And one of my early recollections was, as soon as we joined, Swami decided to give us saris. And as soon as the word came that Swami is going to distribute saris, as he's holding one there in that picture, we formed ourselves in rows facing each other, and he would walk in between and throw one sari to his right and one to his left and distribute and so on. And it was so incredible, because Swami gave us this beautiful cotton sari, and he came and discussed his fabric and the color scheme, and he even mentioned it was a bit transparent. It was an orange and maroon sari, and I'm sure Madhu has one too, and I do too. And he said, "It's a bit transparent, so I've ordered matching petticoats for you, because it'll be difficult to put it all together for his birthday. This is another sari, which also I have, but the visual is not of that same sari." So as Swami was distributing the sari, many girls said, "Swami, thank you," because we were all new and we were so excited. And Swami said, "Don't mention, don't mention." Eventually, after he gave me my sari, he went to the row behind me. So naturally, we all turned towards his side to watch him distribute saris to the girls in front of us. And for me, the moment was very surreal, because here is his hand coming right in my face as he's handing out the sari to the person in front of me. And I'm thinking, oh my God, he's got the whole wide world in that hand, and that hand is in my face. What can I do right now? So I just impulsively stretched my fingers and I touched his hand and I quickly kissed my own fingers. And he looked at me with a quizzical look and he turned and he said, "Pagal." And he just called me crazy, and that's the best compliment he's ever given me, because only by being crazy about him have I found sanity in my life. Only by being obsessed with the Lord of Puttaparthi does my life and my situation make sense. Shortly thereafter, Swami gave us our first ever interview. There's a shot of the interview room in the prayer hall. Whenever Swami called us in larger groups, he would give us interviews in the prayer hall, because we were hundreds of us and we would not fit in a small room. In one of these interviews, after he finished the interview, Swami started walking in rows to give us Pad Namaskar. Because I was so new and because I was so inexperienced, which I still am, and I always get very excited around Swami, as soon as he walked towards me, I had read a lot of Sai literature by the time I joined his college. That's him entering the prayer hall and going, shh, don't make, because everybody went, Swami, and he's like, shh, be quiet. And that's the door he entered from. And we would all sit in front of his dais, where normally men typically sit in during bhajans, and he would speak to us. And then he started giving namaskar. There will be more slides of that. And taking letters, walking through the rows. And when he was walking by me, I decided to speak to him in my mother tongue, which is Kashmiri. And I started, and being my whiny self, even that moment with God, I started to complain. I said, Swami, you never speak to us in Kashmiri. And he looked at me very calmly and he said, I'll talk, I'll speak later. And he responded in perfect Kashmiri to me. And in Kashmiri, he said, we will talk and we will talk later. And that is very significant, because I knew that he knows every language that's ever spoken on earth. And for me, I just wanted him to acknowledge that as well. I also had another desire. I had heard that in the hostel, all these other girls were sharing stories of how kind Swami is to his students. This is an interview in the interview room with our warden, Gemma Madam, translating and sitting next to Swami there. In another time, when I heard that Swami had been giving money to girls who had difficulty paying their mess bill or difficulty paying their bus fare or going back home, I wanted to do something to create a situation where Swami would give me some money, because my plan was I would take this money and give it to my mom to keep in the altar. It would be such blessed money. So towards this end, from my first year, I started this ploy of we used to go to Puttaparthi. It would cost us 10 rupees to go and 10 to come in the college bus, and 10 rupees spending money, because you know you could only eat so many buns in the bakery. It wasn't the fancy Puttaparthi it is now. There wasn't too many choices, or there wasn't any opportunity to spend money because canteen was so cheap. So my 30 rupees, I would somehow fan them out of my wallet and leave my wallet at oddest of spots, hoping someone would somehow steal it. Then my plan was I would sit in Darshalan and tell Swami I don't have money for bus fare, so that somehow he would send money for me, and this money I would keep and borrow from my friends, and you know, go, nobody would bother about my not having money. I tried so hard to leave this wallet by the washrooms, middle of the corridor. Everybody would say, hey, what's wrong with you? I found your wallet. Here it is. And nobody ever took a penny out of it, and it left me so dejected. However, there's a black and white shot of my convocation shot. However, by the time I finished my undergrad studies, when Swami gave me my degree, he also gave me a little packet. And when I opened the packet, it had 100 bills, crisp, brand new bills of 5 rupees each, right there. That's the time when I received my degree from Swami's hand. And he gave me a cash award of 500 rupees each. And I realized that with God, no prayer ever goes unanswered. Every time we deposit a prayer at his lotus feet, in its own time, when it is the time and circumstance have to be right and ripe, every prayer will come to fruition. Because we get what we deserve, not what we desire. And in the cosmic plan, the Swami's sense of timing is always different from ours. We should never feel disheartened if Swami doesn't respond. For 3 years, I tried so hard. And then when I gave up complete hope of ever receiving any money from him, he gave me 100 of those bills. Today, I'd like to share that at least some lessons that I received, priceless life lessons from Swami during our first and last interview. In one of our early interviews, Swami told us, you can change that shot to one of the interviews, the prayer hall interviews. Maybe another one. This is the one I want later on. Okay, but it's all right. You can switch it off then. In one of our early interviews in the prayer hall, Swami, as you know, is the greatest feminist living on the face of earth. He's the greatest advocate of women's rights. And in this interview, Swami spoke about the need for empowering women. Swami told us, never underestimate your power as women. He also said, as you know, he has repeatedly said so, that in his entire creation, human beings are the most superior. And amongst human beings, the epitome of God's creation is women. Because in the lap of a woman is the cradle of civilization. If you want to study how advanced a nation is, study its mothers. Because they are the custodians at the grassroots levels of Vedic wisdom, of timeless eternal values. Swami, in this case, decided to pick a very funny story. He told us the story in the interview of a general, a fearsome army general. And he said, this general is so tough. He has this enormous and starched, curled up mustache. And when he walks with his boots on, the entire battalion is petrified. When he walks down the corridor, people go, good morning, sir, and they salute him. And sometimes from the corner of his eye, he goes, he nods, he says, morning, or sometimes he doesn't even respond. Even the enemy across the border shudders at the sound of his name. Such fearsome is his persona. And Swami said, when the same general goes home in the evening at the end of the day, and he greets his wife and says, good evening, madam, to his wife, and she goes, hmm, and she doesn't, is not in a good mood and doesn't respond nicely. Now the general, it's the general's turn to shudder and his knees go weak. And he wonders, what did I do? How did I mess up? Did I forget her birthday? What's wrong here? Swami says women set the tone for everything in their house. So when Swami was doing all this drama about this general and how he gets scared when his wife doesn't respond positively to his greeting, we all burst out laughing. Naturally, because he's so funny and so comical. And for that, Swami said, shh, don't laugh like Pishachinis. Why are you all bursting into these peals of laughter like demonesses? Swami said, women should be very careful about everything they do, including the simple act of laughing. And he gave us the example from Mahabharata. Swami spoke about Draupadi, the famous and beautiful queen of the Pandavas. He said, when the Pandavas had built a new, beautiful palace, the warring cousins, the Kauravas, came on a visit to check out this palace. At that time, you know, there was a huge history of ill will between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. So when the Kauravas entered this palace, the Pandavas had used some incredibly beautiful and translucent material for the flooring. And when the sunlight reflected on it, it looked like water. It was so beautiful. So Duryodhan, the oldest of the Kauravas, he thought he was stepping into water and he lifted the hem of his robe to make sure it doesn't get wet. From across the balcony of the women's quarter, Queen Draupadi was watching this. And when she saw him lift his robe, thinking it was going to get wet, she burst out into peals of laughter. And she made a snide comment. And she said, a blind man's son also seems to be blind. Because Duryodhana was the son of Dhritarashtra, the blind king. And Swami said, that laughter and that snide comment, it hurt his pride, his male ego, so badly, it was shattered beyond repair. And in that moment, by that untimely and uncalled for laughter, Draupadi the queen sowed the seeds of what was to become the Kurukshetra war, which destroyed thousands. He said, women, by simple acts, including the simple act of laughter or how they dress and conduct themselves, set the spiritual tone of their families, the spiritual destiny of their communities, their countries, and even the history of human civilization, as Draupadi did in this case. And Swami said, one of the harshest repercussions of this laughter was the very sad humiliation of Draupadi in the court of the Kauravas many years later when her husband's lost the game of dice. Now, if Swami advised us not to burst into these emotional peals of laughter uncalled for, he also advised us against looking morose, overly morose and serious. Point in this case was, usually when Swami came out to speak to us in the darshan ground, the way we were seated right off the veranda, Swami would be facing us and looking at us and speaking to us, but the general crowd would only see Swami's back. However, they would all watch intently and study our expressions and faces to figure out what Swami was speaking to us. So if we were all smiling or laughing, they knew Swami was joking or saying something nice. But oftentimes, much as people thought Swami was having a very nice conversation with us, there were many times when Swami was actually pulling us up, really scolding us very harshly. Even if one girl had made one tiny mistake, Swami's expectations of discipline are so high, he would yell at all of us. But then he speaks so softly. And then when Swami yells at you, what is your instant reaction? You want the earth to swallow you. So we all looked petrified and scared. So Swami said, when I speak to you outside, and if I'm scolding you, and you all have that scared look, he described it as the constipated castor oil look. And he said, people in the general public are wondering, what is Sai Baba telling his students? Whatever I tell you, you should just fold your hands and be smiling at all times, even when you're being yelled at. And in this connection, towards the end of my bachelor's degree, we had a very beautiful close interview, just about 17 or 18 of us in an interview room. And at that time, it was really bothering us because Swami had said some very tough things to us in the darshan line about our alleged misdeeds. So one of us asked Swami, and she said, Swami, you've been scolding us so much, but we didn't do any of those things which you mentioned. Swami said, don't worry at all. Papam, poor thing, just one girl did it, but how could I single her out? How could I scold her? She would have been mortified. So I decided to scold all of you. So compassionate is the Lord. This one girl, whatever she did, which was not called for, he felt so sorry about it that he decided just make sure. And he said, if somebody scolds you like that in a general way, you should pay full attention to what is being said, introspect and decide, does this apply to me? Did I do it? If you don't do it, let it go. But the person who did it will figure out. And the expression he used, he said, the hat will fit the right head. So the person in the crowd would have known, the rest of you did not have to worry about. Usually, when each of the graduating batches got interviews, Swami gave us some very important life lessons. One of them, in my case, after my bachelor's, was Swami said, character building is a lifelong vocation. It's not just the end of education is character, you're studying in my college and you're done. And he used the example of a boulder. He said, building a character is like, imagine you have this enormous boulder and you're trying to take it uphill. Now, you're huffing and puffing and using all your might and all your energy to even take it up a tiny bit, an inch at a time. And finally, with much effort, you reach the top of the summit and you place this boulder there. And one little slip, what took you months and years to get on top of that summit, can come crashing down in a moment of seconds. Women, as also men, I'm sure, should be very, very mindful of their character, how they conduct themselves. And character building is a lifelong vocation. It does not stop when you leave the portals of my institution. In this connection, I also want to share that, towards the end of the interview, when Swami would finish his divine discourse and pick up that beautiful brocade basket he has in the interview room and start giving out the packets of vibhuti to everybody, that's when girls had opportunity to ask like personal questions. So a lot of girls said, Swami, what should I do next? Everybody, Swami, what is my next course? So Swami, what he did, he started tossing vibhuti with designation, MSc, B.Ed., MBBS, and of course his favorite, MRS, if he wants you to get married and become a Mrs., the most challenging of all designations. And you'd think he's throwing these designations randomly, manchidi, MRS and MBBS, B.Com, M.Com, law, whatever, and he's just throwing these vibhuti packets at you. And then after a while, he said, you all need to back off. Why are you so worried? One thing I want to mention, although it looked like Swami was just doing this stuff randomly and throwing designations at us, nothing at all that the avatar ever speaks is random. Every syllable that emerges from that glorious mouth is Vedas. Everything he said, which seemed like a joke, has come true for each one of us. And then he said, you all need to back off. Why are you all so anxious? And then he spoke about the power of now. This was way before Eckhart Tolle was born, I think. And he said, all of you are so anxious and worried about what am I going to do next? What is in store for me in the future? Who will I marry? Will he be handsome? Will he be rich? He said, why are you all worried about the future? Focus on the present. Because the present is not an ordinary one. It's the omnipresent. In the present lies the seed of the future. The thoughts we think, the words we speak, the motives we hide deep within our hearts are writing the software of our next moment. Each of us is the architect of our own destiny. We decide what life will unfold to us based on how we live the present moment. He urged us to live well in the present, relish it, devour it, seize it, and use it to the best possible advantage, and stop worrying about the future. Swami said, worrying is the most futile of recreation. Never worry. Have full faith in God, and when you're worried, just pray. About this, by the time I got my, in the same interview, when Swami was speaking to a lot of people and talking about worry, I realized I was going to go home, and I had an ominous feeling that as soon as I would go home, Swami would try to get me, my parents would try to get me married. And I realized if I didn't speak to Swami in this interview about this, I would never have an opportunity. I really wanted to come back for my master's program. So while we were still sitting at his lotus feet, when there was a little pause in what Swami was saying, I just mustered some courage and I stood on my knees and I said, Swami, I have a problem. So Swami said, Hama, what is it? And this object of my adoration, this picture I have worshipped, this God, this fantasy in my head is sitting in front of me, and he pulls forward and he puts his ear right in front of my mouth. His big, soft, big, beautiful hair is right in my face. And now is my moment to tell him my problem. But then there were 20 others and I didn't want them to know what my personal issues were, being a very private person sometimes. I had to decide what to do. And it was a very desperate situation. So you know what they say, desperate times call for desperate measures. I blurted out my problem, a big rant, but I was very clever. I spoke in Kashmiri throughout. And when I was done, he pulled back and he said, "Hey, pagal, kaun si bhasha bolta hai?" He said, "You crazy, what language are you speaking?" And then he himself said, "Is it Pashto?" Because Pashto or Persian sounds a lot like Kashmiri. By now I was crying my eyes out. So my sister said, "Swami, you only say there's only one language, the language of the heart." And he was so happy. He said, "Yes, yes, yes." And then he said, "Listen," he gave me the advice that has really stood by me all my life. He said, "You don't worry. You just go and pray." But that pray, he stressed on, pray. And everything will be okay. And he didn't. So this answer, nobody else made out what I was talking about, right? And there were some other family circumstances I was concerned about. So nobody in that interview room knew what else I had spoken to Swami about, what the context of this advice was. Very generic sounding advice. Don't worry, you just pray. Everything will be all right. But he looked me in the eye and gave me a reassurance. And I was very, very calm. And after that, when I went home for 3 weeks in Kashmir, I went to every single temple of my childhood and only prayed. And 3 weeks later, when I got onto that flight to fly back, hallelujah, mom had no ability to hold me back. She just yielded without any fights or pressure. It was so fantastic. See, the moral dilemma I had was throughout Swami kept saying, you do what you want to do, but make sure your parents are happy. That is an advice Swami has for every young person. All of us, you know what they say sometimes, youth is lost on the youthful. When we are young and we decide we know everything that can be known and we know it way better than our parents, Swami's advice is no matter what, your parents are your God and you have to heed to their advice. And that being my moral dilemma, if mom's advice is get married now, what do I do? I thought the only person I could reach out to and seek help was Swami. And that day, he gave me a lease of 3 more years at his lotus feet. And those 3 years have meant so much to me. I can never, ever thank him enough for that. You know that girls or five girls with Swami? Can you come in the interview room? Can you? Yeah, this one. By the time I got to my master's degree, we were the first batch of girls to attend the master's program at the Satisai, what was then known as the Satisai Institute of Higher Learning, and all five of us are there. There are two girls who did their master's in English, one girl in the front who did her master's in Telugu under our principal madam, Dr. Hemlata madam, who lives in Chicago, and my friend and I. My friend is wearing glasses and I, we were both philosophy students. And at this interview, because we were the first batch of masters, we had so many beautiful close experiences with Swami and everybody was doting upon us, so to speak. We wanted to do something to thank Swami, just one little tiny gesture. But as students, we are not allowed to give any gifts to Swami. Swami doesn't expect anything from us except a desire to please Him by following His teachings. That's all the Lord of the universe needs. And however, we just felt compelled we should give Swami something. So we hatched a plot, and the girl who's sitting in front of me with the wide smile is my friend Gayatri, who was the most adventurous of all of us. And her mom was in town in Puttaparthi. So we hatched a plan, we will get Swami a robe and a dhoti and present it to him. Never heard of. Girls are not supposed to do things like that there. But then Gayatri decided, since her mom was in town, she would sneak out of the ashram. We never stepped outside the ashram gates. She went with her mom in search of a dhoti and fabric for the robe. And after some effort, she managed to get a beautiful orange silk dhoti with the gold trim and fabric for a nice soft robe. And then they went in quest for the tailor. Now that was a different story. You know, sometimes in that part of the world, you go and the person says, Amma, now is my lunch time. You come back after 5 o'clock. So they'd go at 5. He'd say, Amma, today I'm tired. You come tomorrow, you talk to me. So they did this several times. And finally, when he said, I'll definitely sew it tomorrow, you bring the fabric. They went with the fabric and the tailor had gone off to Bangalore. So, in the meanwhile, we knew that we were going to get called for this interview anytime soon and we had to do something very fast. So we decided we would package this fabric and the dhoti and write a very loving letter to Swami and say, Swami, we have nothing to offer you except this small token of love, and this also is incomplete because the tailor really left us in the lurch. So please, Swami, can you be so kind and accommodating as to get it stitched? And here's a 100-rupee bill. Please help yourself to stitching charges. And we put the 100-rupee bill for the Lord of all, the source of all wealth, with this silly letter. We made a tight parcel. And because Gayatri was so skinny, we tucked it inside her sari. And she covered it with her pallu very nicely. And we went into the small the main interview room for an interview. Now, when this interview was going on, Swami was talking to everybody. And when the interview finished, we wanted to get that early bird vibhuti packets because we were making eyes at each other. So the five of us ran up to Swami, and when he started distributing the vibhuti, we grabbed our share of vibhuti as fast as we could. And then Swami has such magnetism. When he's speaking or giving vibhuti, if there are 25 people, nobody knows who's standing next to you. All eyes are glued on him. Every ear is tuned to what he has to say. Everybody was so busy with Swami, and this is the biggest daredevil thing I've ever done in my life. The four of us broke into the inside interview room. We parted the curtain and we did what no woman has ever done without Swami's knowledge. We ran and dashed into the inside room to hide this gift. And that's the only time in my life I've ever seen that room. And I was expecting some sort of furniture there. There was nothing. It's a tiny room, bare bones, clean floor, one measly chair for Swami. So we didn't know what to do with this parcel and we had to quickly come out. So we just hid it behind his chair. And as soon as we came out into the main interview room, we were hoping nobody would notice. Actually, nobody did. That also was His grace. We saw Swami had opened the main door of the interview room and he was telling the girls to troop out, and he himself went out on the veranda to talk to the boys. So our teachers were guiding the girls out in a single profile to step out of the interview room and go and sit off the veranda on the ladies' side, which was our designated spot. So we joined this line like we were always there and quickly trooped out. Physically, Swami did not see us because he was already on the veranda. As we had barely sat in rows, we were in the front row, and so we could tell from the way people's heads were turning, he was coming towards us. So we all sat upright, And amazingly, the same Swami who was so friendly and loving and giving in the interview room was walking, looking very morose and serious with his head down. And as soon as he came near us, he said very seriously, "All those children who hid clothes for me, I will make sure they all fail in their exam." And five silly frantic voices said, "No, Swami, please don't." And everybody turned towards us and we said, "Oh my God, we gave it away, what fools." And then Swami burst out laughing, "I got you" kind of look. And then because he laughed, all the tension was diffused and we felt so happy that he had acknowledged what we had done and we got away with it. One of the rare moments. This is the same interview picture which he gave every batch, the BSc, the BComs, the BAs, and we were the five girls who did a master's that year. That he took with us. You can change the picture. I also want to say one of these interviews, when Swami was giving the vibhuti, I noticed that throughout the interview, those days Swami used to chew paan, and he kept wiping his mouth with his kerchief and placing it on the arm of his chair. Then he would wipe his mouth and place it again. And then when he stood to give the vibhuti, the kerchief was calling my name. I could hear it, you know, I was so tantalized to grab it. But I didn't want to take it without his permission. But if I asked him, "Swami, can I please have your kerchief?" Even before I would finish the sentence, I thought everybody will pounce on it and take it and I won't even get a shred. So again, when he was giving vibhuti, I tippy-toed and I sort of called out him and said, "Swami, Swami," and he said, "What?" And I asked him again in Kashmiri that your kerchief is lying there, can I have it? He said, "Haan, tisko." In Telugu, he said, "Take it." So I took that kerchief as well, which of course is with my mom along with one of the robes he has given us. One of the last memories I have of my time in Anandpur College is when Swami came on one of the final visits to Anandpur. There are many slides of Anandpur visit there. You can just play them. When Swami arrived, it was one of the early years when we were going to do a sports day in the campus. Uncle who's here, Uncle Srinivas is here, and our principal madam's husband, he was present at that time. And you can keep playing them. And when Swami arrived, all the girls, all the staff, all the guests were all in the field at the back of the college. The college was spick and span. Beautiful rangolis had been laid out everywhere. And when he reached the porch, only our principal madam and heads of departments were waiting to welcome him. Now, Swami, I have this knack of always being in the wrong place at the wrong time and getting myself into trouble. It's just some old karma, that software I wrote in my last life. I was supposed to be in the field at the back. I was innocently walking towards the field when somebody called me and said, "Go to hostel and bring a jug for Swami's guests." So off I went running because somebody had told us Swami's car is around the corner, so there was high scale panic. When I came back with this jug, I entered to relay the message, the jug is not available. As soon as I entered the college building, they locked all the shutters. And then the college building is locked except for the front shutter from where Swami would enter. So I got locked in a building where I wasn't supposed to be. And before I could find anybody, I pin drop silence and Swami arrives. And his car is so quiet. And as soon as he arrived, he was welcomed, I think by uncle and some others. And then he walked into this beautiful lobby, the foyer of our college. And Swami is so beautiful. I was mesmerized. I was lost in the moment that I'm not supposed to be there. And I witnessed a ceremony I had never seen in my entire life. Right in the towards the center of the foyer, Principal Madam seated Swami on a very beautiful seat. And Principal Madam, Jemma Madam, and Pushpa Madam, that is our warden, our librarian, also Madhu's aunt, and our Principal Madam, Dr. Hemlata, they placed his lotus feet in a beautiful basin. I was not familiar with this ceremony, and they performed what is known as Pada Puja. And they washed his feet beautifully, they wiped them and they applied kumkum and chandan, and they all did beautiful pad namaskars and took aarti. And Swami was so yielding. He was ocean of compassion. He just sat through it smiling. He was in no hurry. He had nothing else to do in the universe except to let these ladies perform these puja. And while watching it, I got so carried away because it was in the middle of the foyer and we have two Scarlett O'Hara kind of stairs going up. So I stood on one of the steps watching. I was lost. I had no idea of time and space, lost in the moment. And at that time, the puja ended and they took aarti and Swami stood, and I realized, oh my God, I'm not even supposed to be here. But what a beautiful thing I witnessed. And I stood up and I didn't know where to hide because it's so quiet. There is nobody. The building is empty. So I saw Swami stood up to go to his right to see, inspect the corridors and all the display boards to see what the kids, the girls had put up. So I ran to my left. But when I ran to my left, the room that was open was the guest room where Swami used to sit, like a formal living room with his guests. So I couldn't enter that. I wanted to hide in the bathroom, but somebody was smart enough to lock them up. So I had no place to go. So being my bright self, I ran around the corridor frantically and I decided I'll hide behind the statue of the Saraswati in the middle of the lawn. So I went to hide, but I didn't know what to do. I was a lot slimmer there. So I tried to hide under the wing of her swan. And I ducked and I stood there and I could hear my heartbeat so fast. And I could hear Swami speaking very softly and Principal Madam and all the other heads of department explaining, Swami, this is this department, this is the chemistry lab, whatever lab. I could hear their voices and I was praying to him to not get caught. Now, that was truly chanting his name to avoid him. That was my gloriously oxymoronic moment. Saram, 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 Swami, please don't see me. And then there was pin drop silence. So I thought the danger had passed, everything was okay, and I quickly, gently came out to peep from behind the statue. Just as I did that, little did I know that he had just only stopped speaking, and he's so soft-footed, he was right there. And as soon as I saw him, Swami saw me from the corner of his eyes, and he had a bouquet of flowers that he had been presented with when he had entered the building. He flung it in my direction. And like an excited fool that I am, I flung both my hands to grab it to make it so obvious I'm hiding here. And that's when all the teachers saw me. But because Swami smiled so nicely, again I got away with it. Because if he smiles, everything is kosher with us. After the Saraswati episode, I pretty much, that was in the month of May, and shortly after that I went home and I never came back to see Swami for a period of about 10 years. During those 10 years, I realized that Swami had now sent me out of his college and enrolled me in a school of some really hard knocks. And it was time for me to practice and to practice walking the talk and living the lecture. And that's when I realized it was so much harder to practice all these things he had told us in the interview rooms, in the lecture, the power of women, the power of now, character being a lifelong vocation, please your parents no matter what, earn the blessings of your elders. It was the hardest challenge of my life. And that's the part I have saved to share with you after lunch. My life after leaving Swami's college and after I got married and took up a career. And all that exciting, all that comes, whatever comes in trail of such an exciting mix. But before I close, I'll just run you through some of the slides I have to share with you right now. And I hope I have time for that. Let me see. Not really, right? 5 more minutes? Okay. That is a shot of Swami standing in our hostel lobby with that old-fashioned telephone on that corner. And as you can see, somebody, the telephone, everybody had their own duties. The telephone girls were smart enough to hang the receiver on the side, so there were no phone calls coming when Swami was there. And down below you can see one time Swami came to a college and in the library we did this golu that they do in Andhra Pradesh in South India for the time of Dashera, Navratri, because his visit coincided. So they decorate dolls. So we also decorated dolls, but many of the girls were dressed like live dolls. That's a jhula we put for Swami when Swami came for Pongal. And I think uncle would remember this very clearly. When Swami came for Pongal, we did in the center of our college garden, we created a replica of a village and we did everything that villagers do to welcome the Pongal festival, the harvest festival. That Swami walking from college to hostel, I'm in the background, Swami's in the foreground. One day the twain shall meet. Down below you can see our principal madam Dr. Hemlata and Swami handing out a shield for sports day to one of the winners. That is Swami in our auditorium watching a program. Next to him is principal madam and Dr. Hemlata, and next to her is the famous playback singer P. Sushila and Anjani Devi, the famous actress who has produced a serial called Parthi Sai Shirdi Sai. And some of the bhajan girls are so lucky they got to sit at Swami's lotus feet right there. This is Swami watching one of the skating performances in those days, you know. This is before the modern sports day came up. This was the best we could put together. And Swami loved it. They wore rollerblades and they did a little performance. Principal Madam is standing next to Swami. And Swami said, wow, these girls can, they just glide. What is it in your feet? And he was asking questions and showing so much interest. And the person he's speaking to is a lady named Dipali Arun. And she's the president of the Sri Sathya Sai Baba Center of Ottawa in Canada right now. That Swami sitting on the jhula in the college. That is a beautiful picture. The one to your left is in our prayer hall in the hostel, and the one with the shivling is in the library. Now we made the shivling with hand using paper mache, and I have so many stories related to it, but maybe another time. That Swami walking down the corridors and talking to girls. That's how he would arrive. That Swami's car and the Rangoli and Principal Madam and Jemma Madam and Pushpa Madam would welcome him. And right as he walked in, they performed the Pada Puja that I described to you. That's him going up the steps that we would, steps of the hostel. The same steps that we went up day and night, they were sanctified by his divine touch. And there he is going. That's him arriving another time. That's from Prashanti. That's it. So I have a little film show for you and a lot of experiences to share. So please stay with us and enjoy your lunch. Thank you. Sairam.